that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Colin Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find a flick that monster boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Are you ready to mustache? Welcome back, my friends. Oh, it's another episode of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. This is season 7. This is the K-Feb, and we are presenting free mustache rides. I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu. So happy to be with you today. And I am joined by my friends, including Jim Cotta.
I want to just do a shout out to our pal, Dambala.
Dambala. All right. Besides Dambala, we've got Jack Hall.
Dude, I know you're always complaining about things peaking, and then you do that opening. And my ears are still hurting. Like, Lord.
I'm excited. I get excited for the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. All right, Nick. Nick.
Greetings and salutations. You're way too happy to be watching this movie.
How could I not be? This is Boris fucking Karloff.
Oh, the Boogaloo is
for about 2 seconds.
Who cares? That's at end of life.
Oh, God, do we time Boris Karloff's time in this?
I did, and I'll get back to you with that.
And near the end of their lives, at the end of their careers, these guys, they went and did all these movies, and so every one of them, I think if you put all of their time together, you might have a regular feature in, like, because he did 4 movies with this and in Mexico, and it's like, I'll bet you that each of them probably has about 10 minutes of his screen time in it, probably. But Isle of the Snake People, and I wish you good luck, Nick, describing this movie.
Oh, yeah, I have to do that, yes. Don't I?
Sucker.
I think now the person
who picks a movie must describe the movie. Oh.
I say it again for people. I want them to understand the Boogaloo is strong with this one.
Oh, yes, it is. Well, our main protagonist enters the story about 5 minutes in, it seems. Now, one of them is a girl who is a crusader for justice. She is against the drink. And
we've got
a police commandant driving into town, this small town on this island, who really wants to clean up the police force, who coincidentally is drunk all the time, according to the first scene. Now, to help her do this, I don't know why she's going to see her uncle for support of this temperance league. I think it's like the League of No Saloons. It's a poorly named society.
The Anti-Saloon League.
Yeah.
Anti-Saloon League.
Dun.
But she goes to her uncle and asks for help with this. Now, he owns half the island, and I was unclear whether at the start he was actually a voodoo priestess, or that was the big reveal at the end. I just assumed for the entire movie he was the bad guy, but
they didn't introduce a lot of alternate bad guys. That's for
sure. Yeah, there weren't. Yeah, but the end of the movie, when they did reveal it, I think I was supposed to gasp.
Yeah.
But I had assumed the entire time that
twist ending.
This was not a secret. Now, he and his voodoo witch priestess are, I don't really know their motivations either. Now, they're messing around with the locals. Now, the drunk cops, they sort of have a policy with locals. Don't freaking do anything. They manage themselves. So, you know, the voodoo murders have been going undetected. So there's voodoo murders with the snake and some sort of cannibal women that when the cops discover these bodies and discover the cannibal women, they're really appalled that they have blood on their faces. Never mind the actual murder. And then it goes on for like 90 minutes and then really sort of just peters out.
Petering out. That's actually a really good way of putting the ending.
There's not really an ending on this. It's just sort of, we got enough time. Nobody is watching by this point. It's 100 or 90 minutes in. Nobody's watching. We can turn off the cameras. I was unsure at the end. I mean, they did show Boris Karloff in a fire, but I'm not sure if he's dead or not.
This is it's interesting because this is one of those cases where, like, 1971, this is the kind of movie that most of the time I think you would get in it, clocking in at about 70 to 80 minutes, and this one goes a full 90, and so that it probably was a little bit long as a whole.
Well, what I want to say is, despite Nick's very wonderful description of the film. I believe IMDb does it one better this time. Their entire description of the film is evil scientist runs a veritable army of LSD crazed zombies.
Well, there was no LSD and LSD and was there a scientist?
I have no idea.
It was Boris Karloff was a scientist. He had beakers and stuff, so I assume.
Yeah, that's right. Remember there was that scene where he tried to move stuff with his mind?
Oh yes. Oh, what a great, great scene.
Oh yeah. using science. Yes. There's this scene that Boris Karloff and the new commandant are meeting each other, and Boris Karloff's trying to show that he has learned how to do telekinesis, so he can move stuff with his mind, and what he's got to move is this like small disc that it's going to spin if he's able to move it with his mind. And then, so he's concentrating, he's doing the thing, and then the disc just moves a little bit, and the commandant goes, well, see, telekinesis is not real. I'm like, I really isn't moved at all proof?
Yeah.
This was like, it didn't move enough for the commandant's liking. You only proved a small level of telekinesis.
That could have been wind.
Yeah, until the woman comes in, the snake woman, and she winds up making things start on fire with her mind.
Yeah.
She's got pyrokinesis.
I still don't think the commandant believed this, though.
Actually, was the commandant actually useful?
Commandant, commandant, whatever the hell.
Did he add anything to the story? Could you just cut him out and be good?
Well, probably, but couldn't you say that about every character in the movie?
Yeah.
He's the only one with any lines.
Like, oh, yeah. I was just thinking about it. Like, so because we had the Temperance Crusader who fell in love with the lazy scene.
That was my takeaway from the moving the glass scene, is she falls into the drunk's arms almost immediately.
Yep.
Well, there's not a lot of competition on this island, honestly.
Yeah, but I mean,
maybe she got into this. temperance thing to meet. Maybe she got into the temperance thing to meet men. There's not a lot of people on the island. You know, she's up against the snake dancing woman. So competition is high.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of women in bikinis dancing.
Oh yeah. Actually thought this was an Ed Wood movie for a moment.
But who wouldn't find a woman attractive with a line like, modern science has shown that alcohol is responsible for 99.2% of all the world's sins.
I'd
love to see that study. That's very specific. Yes.
I love that he challenges her on that. She's like, it's science.
It's science, dude.
It's like that's
99.2% is scientifically proven.
Yeah, the scientist was probably Dambala.
Oh my god, this film is Let's get to scoring.
I also love the one because Boris Karloff, the reason he's trying to perfect telekinesis, eliminate war and poverty.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. If I can make everyone telekinetic, no war and poverty.
Well, he does get he gets credited as both characters in this movie, Dambala and as Karl von Mater or whatever. So you know,
yes. Well, he is. Yeah. He's both. Yeah. So.
He's both characters. So he gets credited twice because one is wanted to solve world hunger and one.
But who played the fake Dambala?
Jerry something.
Yes, that was one of those moments immediately as I was started watching the movie and I noticed that they have a credit for Boris Karloff's stand-in. I'm like, oh, it's like that, is it?
Well, they filmed the film in Mexico, but due to Boris Karloff's poor health, he couldn't be there, so he was in Hollywood. So his films were seen and filmed in Hollywood. Everybody else's films. This is the second to last film. This is everybody else's stuff was filmed in Mexico.
Yeah, and I think it's only four. I think I only counted four sets that he is on. Like almost all of his scenes are in one set. The answer to the earlier question is I counted 15 minutes. Of screen time for Boris.
More than I expected, but I was surprised when at the end they didn't just use the master double when he actually showed up, because I was guessing he thought he was in a different movie.
Well, because he did four films, like four films produced at the same time, and he shot all the scenes for all of them, and this is the one he liked the most because this is, you know, the one Jack Hill had rewritten the best. Yeah.
I would love to know what the script was like before Jack Hill wrote it.
Exactly.
Like if this is
the good version.
Yeah, like he turned them all down until Jack Hill rewrote them. So like, what did they look like before? Because there's not a lot of sense to be made out of this movie, which is not a bad thing in this case.
No, it's what KFAB was created for.
Yeah, it's funny because there's not actually a lot to describe about the movie. We've actually described most of the movie by now because there's so little actual plot within the movie. Other than the crazy voodoo wedding thing where they like the opening scene where they dig up a woman, bring her to life, and then the one character
let's save that for the WTF, man.
All right, I think we're ready to go scoring.
I really do. It's not like, wait, how much more are we going to talk about the plot? We
we don't know the plot.
I got one more plot question. Who's the narrator? Is it the lieutenant?
I thought it was the alcoholic dude.
He's the lieutenant.
Wilhelm.
Drinker, yeah. Yeah. So it is him. Okay. I was confused because he hasn't come in until like 10 minutes into the movie, but he's narrating from the beginning.
He survives. Right.
I guess there's that. Like, yeah. I mean, aside from the casino thing, that usually the narrator actually makes it through. All right. So in our search for the ultimate B movie, we rate each film in 5 categories, usually later in the episode.
Everybody's very excited about the story.
None of the categories is objective quality. And our first category is called Schlock Appeal, and we start with Stan.
Schlockamania runs wild today. We got lots of snakes and no sense. See, these are the kind of movies in the, you know, these kind of movies, like the older style movies that we watch. And I mean, 1971 is fairly late for a movie like this, which really owes a lot more, I think, to the 1950s and 60s probably, but it's definitely crazy on so many levels. So I'm going to go fairly high. I'm going to go with a 7.
Come on.
That's only average high.
Yeah. I mean, we have a star 40 years past his prime. Filmed in Mexico, rewritten by Jack Hill. 9.
I consider this to be the second schlockiest movie we've watched yet. Only, and I don't know if that gives it any appeal, but I do know it gives it a lot of schlock. Like, only Frankenstein Island I would consider to be a schlockier experience than this so far.
Ooh,
so
I can't wait till we get to Schlock Island.
So I or schlock, but I got a 9 out of 10 for them.
Well, all of those things, it's Karloff, and it's, I was hoping against hope, because Karloff didn't do a lot of movies in the mustache era. You know, early on, he did not have the mustache. So, and we haven't given nearly enough credit to having a Mexican exotic dancer be one of the villains, one of the key villains of this film, Tongolele.
And she's not even Mexican, which is the funny thing. But
I thought she was Mexican.
She's from Spokane.
Oh,
really?
Well, she could be of Mexican descent, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure she is from, I mean, her name is Yolanda Montez, so it's like of Mexican descent for sure.
Was Cuban, but I don't know.
No, Mexican, well, yes, but yes, born in Spokane, Washington.
All right, good on her.
And actually, the most compelling character in the movie.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, that schlock of white hair she had really gave her more personality than anybody else in this movie.
I would have done a 9, but within minutes of the beginning of this film, there's a little person as a voodoo priest.
That's true. That is very true.
So it's a 10.
Yeah.
Good point. Bring me up to a 9.
Thank you.
The little person.
We allow changes until we close up the mailbag. All right. Next category is called More Heart Than Budget. Wait, do we have a budget? I like to say
$100,000.
$100,000. Wow. I like to say the budget before we do the rating so that we get some more context.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, actually, $100,000. I thought that Karloff was paid $100,000 for each movie. So, okay, if that's true, then this definitely gets a high score for More Heart Than Budget, because they put all the money into Karloff and no money into anything else. So the rest of it comes out wonderfully then. I'll go with an 8.
I can't go higher than a 5. It didn't make any sense, and there was really not a lot of attempt to make it make sense.
Boris Karloff.
Compelling argument there, Stan. I got a 4. Like, it really is a movie made just to make a movie. like there is no, yeah.
I think that they wrapped wrapping this voodoo story from South Pacific voodoo too, which is not a voodoo I was familiar with. around
not one that you normally
And at one point, I'm pretty sure they use an Old West set to like a Wild West town set to kind of stretch the line. So I'm going to 7 on this one.
They used everything that they possibly had. Like there's nothing left unused for this.
All right. Hope you found a babysitter for your kids. What the fuck moments?
Well, I believe this is what everybody was waiting for in that regard.
I think we're all excited to get to this one now.
So yeah, this one was one case that I actually did have to make notes on, and I'm sure I just marked some of the easier ones for me. It really starts out during the opening credit where they show a statue and the statue has boobs. And it's like, what the hell? There's the opening, which I know Nick is going to want to talk about, and that's great, and I want him to talk about it, but like the wedding, and I know that voodoo requires a sacrifice of a chicken, but damn, the chicken scene in there was just fucked up.
It was a lifeless chicken.
Oh god,
man.
Yeah.
Until they killed it.
And then it's just like, but there's no blood spurting out of that, but it's just like, it's a love chicken. Yeah, it's
I'm pretty sure they killed a real chicken.
Actually, yeah, there's a couple of moments where, yes, because they killed two animals. They killed a chicken and something else, and the other one for sure seemed like it must have been a real animal. There's moments, the direction is not necessarily inspired in this anyways, but there's moments where I swear that this is like SCTV 3D style direction where it's just like, woom, woom, in, out, in, out.
Oh, dude, this is the inspiration for the Monster Chiller Horror Theater on SCTVs. This movie's like, why that segment was created in the first place was to make movies like this and make fun of them.
Yeah, it's fantastic in that regard. There's this great scene where they have the map of the globe. You know, we've seen that a million times in movies, but like it's passing by North America, and then it settles on the small island of, like, what was it called? Was it Snake Island? And it was just like, hey, wait. That island doesn't actually exist.
Not only doesn't it exist, if you compare it to the rest of the globe, it's about the size of Texas.
Yeah, I know. That's right. Like, it's this enormous island. Yeah. And it's just like, wow, why isn't that bigger? Why haven't we really heard of this island before? There's the voodoo wedding that I mentioned earlier, and they play a record, and I'm not sure if they obviously must have put the sound in afterwards, but the record actually just sounded like musicians warming up. It was so terrible. It was like caterwauling. Terrible, terrible stuff. And then there was a whipping scene.
Oh, yes. Yes, there was.
And that whipping scene, like, usually when you see a whipping scene, there's some level of pain that's associated with being whipped. In this case, it actually looked far more like an interpretive dance thing, which I actually thought kind of similar of the entire movie. I think the entire movie that was shot was an interpretive dance movie. If Boris Karloff could dance, then it would have been much like,
yeah,
that.
I wrote down whips and chains excite me. Does seem like
we already knew that.
Pretty enjoyable scene.
And then I'm not sure, like, at the end of the movie, was there supposed to, like, was it the regular voiceover? Because the voiceover came back in, and it sounded to me like it was talking like the Dombala character, like Boris Karloff, but it was very obviously not Boris Karloff's voice. So I was just wondering if anybody else caught that.
No freaking clue. No idea.
I was thinking, finally.
I know exactly. At the end of the movie, I was not riveted to my seat at the end of this thing, going, "What's next?"
Well, this movie is well, again, like a lot of movies. I mean, where the storylines make no sense and the point of the entire movie is questionable. The what the fuck kind of goes there. So we're going to go 10.
Oh, yeah. You talked a little about the opening scene, and yes, we have the big boob statue followed by the little person killing the chicken. Then we start to resurrect the mummy.
Actually, yeah.
Now we have the Indiana Jones type guy just standing there, and the little person, as they're watching the mummy sort of resurrect into a beautiful woman, the little person caresses the Indiana Jones buttocks with his face repeatedly.
So awesome.
We don't know why. And then the Indiana Jones pushes him away and he gets kind of sad. The little person does.
But he comes back for more.
Oh yeah, of course he does. He comes back for, we don't know why. Why is he trying to caress the leg of Indiana Jones? And why is Indiana Jones?
That's no leg. That is a buttock.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just face right up in the old ass. It's a very weird scene.
Uh-huh.
And of course, then Indiana Jones jumps into the cop. Yeah, I knew I was in for a ride then. That, and I'm still trying to figure out what sort of prison system they have there. Because the commandant walks into the office and starts, one guy's in uniform and he has to go, so the rest of these guys are prisoners?
They're just having a sleep.
The police and who's the prisoners, our main cop. I assume he's the main cop because he's in this movie and he's white. Is just hanging out in a cell.
He's sleeping it off. He's sleeping off his drunk.
Really, I was on the temperance side of this whole movement. Yeah, we need to clean this up. But at no point does any of this come back into it, really. Yeah, this movie made no sense. And there's so much weird. So much weird. I have to give it an 8.
Well, the buttock caressing was probably my number one. It took it from me. But I did the same thing, like the Indiana Jones character. I don't know what role he really played. All I know is he's there and he's one of the bad guys, and he would take the women that were turned into zombies and dance with them and look like he might be about to have sex with them, and then in would come like the stripper woman we talked about from Spokane, and then he'd go no, and then they'd have a real high close up of her really intense eyes and he'd be screaming. And then the next scene, he would just be fine.
But her intense eyes were intense.
Intense. Like, they're crazy intense. Like, they love that shot because they did that shot like 4 times in this movie of her intense eyes.
Yeah, it's probably the same shot.
Oh, yeah. Probably. So, yeah, that's my biggest one. I got a 6 on this.
6?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. That's that was unexpected.
I think little piece of people caressing buttocks would have been higher on it. You know what?
Well, let's keep in mind that the only reason that there is a little person in this movie, and by the way, I'd like to point out the little person's name in the credits is Dwarf. It's clear that the only reason why is because somebody said, "Hey, does little people creep people out?" And they said, yeah. And they went, well, put one in the film.
And give him sunglasses.
They're like, you know,
I've seen him before in other movies, though.
So. 7. Let's go to 7.
He's only been... wait, are you changing your number to 7 or he's been in 7 movies? 7. Okay. I thought maybe you were about to give
us more. I might change it again when you're done there, Jim. Okay,
so the temperance girl. She's everyone wants to mess with her. The lieutenant tries to, basically tries to give her a Mickey. He gives her he's feeding her liquor the second he can. And And at one point, she gets the zombie medicine, has some weird dreams. So the temperance woman is having a dream about herself with a snake, and then the two of them start making out. And I think, you know, I don't know what your thing is, but I mean, if you meet your doppelganger, maybe you should make out.
that was something right there. That was
pretty good. 8. mark me down for an 8.
There's a couple of set design things that I just loved. So there's one point where one of Karloff's rare scenes, it's the master's a three shot with Karloff sitting down, and then the lieutenant and the temperance woman, the only two women in this, Annabella. they're all having a discussion about science and such, and every time it goes to the one shot of Annabella, there's a giant toucan over her shoulder.
Yes, that's right. There was a parrot.
There's a parrot on the other side of the set, and a toucan next to her. That's not in the. It's not in the three shot. I think you can kind of see it every once in a while, but it's every shot of her, she's sharing the frame with the toucan. Like, it's not over.
That's like the way they framed it too. It's just like you're on the side, and the toucan gets the other side.
Toucans,
we love our toucans. Yes,
like loved his appearance.
I'm surprised he didn't get a character credit. Actually, given that they credit Boris Karloff twice as Carl Van Mulder and Dombawa, and they give a credit to his stand-in right off the top, like in the opening credits. So yes, the toucan probably deserved a credit.
Well, he was one of the best actors in the movie.
Well, of course.
Knew how to hit its marks. Annabella gets drugged, and she falls asleep. When she wakes up, she's inside a coffin, but she's inside a coffin that's got a glass window in it. As you often find in coffins.
Most coffins should, you know. I mean, you want to be able to see out and see the sights.
Yeah. I mean, what if someone wakes up and they're inside a coffin that doesn't have a window? That could upset you.
Oh man, that's freaky.
Yeah, what's the part that's unreasonable?
I actually thought that was a common practice earlier this century. That they had windows in coffins.
This century or the last century? The previous one,
I guess.
You're thinking around 2001, 2002.
I believe I've seen it in Westerns before.
Oh, yeah, because they had a lot of glass and plastic in Westerns. Like for a coffin. Because glass works really well when you've got a whole bunch of dirt pushing into it.
So the opening credits, which are almost half the runtime of the movie, I think,
and closing, because the closing credits also featured the boobed statues. So.
That's right, and it's got these, like.
By the way, that is the only nudity in this movie.
Oh,
I thought this movie would have significantly more.
Yeah, there. The credits are hand lettered. They're mostly over a publicity photo of Boris Karloff's face, just to give it. I didn't count that in his screen time. Maybe I should have. But at one point, about an hour into the movie, when they start talking about Dombawa more, a card comes up on the screen that says Dombawa in the same lettering as the original credits.
Oh yes. Oh, man.
For no reason, and it doesn't happen any other time during the movie either. It's not like got like chapter headers or something. So 10 for me on this one.
Yeah, there's... Well,
throw me back down to a 7. Look around.
Oh my god!
Memorable moments, man. What do you remember from this flick?
Well, I remember that it had Boris Karloff, sorta.
Yeah.
If I hadn't written stuff down. Then I probably would have forgotten them.
I'd be in trouble too. I watched this 4 days ago.
Yeah. there's no doubt about it that I could undoubtedly watch all of the four movies that he made for Mexico, and at the end of them, I bet you that I would not be able to tell you which part was from which movie, other than if you showed me Isle of the Snake People, with the poster, and I'd be like, "Oh, I remember that one had snakes," And that one had that Tonga Lele girl, so I would probably remember her for sure, and that shock of white hair. But yeah, there's really very little in a year or 2 years. It'll just be like little flashes of like random, and I couldn't tell you which movie they came from. So I'm gonna go with the two.
For the amount of weird shit that is in this movie, it is remarkably boring. our description here makes me want to watch it again. Yet I sat through it and did not have a good time.
I had a good time, but yes, it's yeah. Definitely.
I had an excellent time.
I'm not going to remember this movie. A year from now, I wouldn't be surprised if we accidentally put this in another season. Two. Yeah.
That is really fair. If we wound up seeing like the Hungarian title, Cult of the Dead, and we're like, yeah, Cult of the Dead sounds like a good movie.
Where next season we're doing iconic film directors, and Jack Hale qualifies, so who knows, it might take that quick. Oh my gosh. I gotta be honest with you. This movie, the scenes that they did, which were like really crazy moving cameras and close ups and shots of the intense eyes and the weird music, and I found that stuff actually really creepy. Like I thought like the voodoo ceremonies that they were doing like that, you know, I'll remember that. I actually remember that stuff really well. I thought they did a good job of, is the actually only thing that they succeeded in doing what they wanted to do, which was make a scary movie. In that case, I think they made something that was creepy, and the voodoo stuff feels creepy. And so it probably connected more to me on that level. So I got a six with this.
Nice. I think the next time I watch that James Bond movie that's got all the voodoo in it, I'm going to think, you know who did the voodoo scene really good? It's Isle of Snake people. Actually, what I'm going to say is it would be that Boris Karloff movie that I can't remember the name of.
Yeah,
like whatever that Karloff movie was that we did on the show, that one did a really good voodoo scene. I'm kind of stuck on the little person as the Papa Doc character. He was great.
Just talking about Baron Samedi. It's
Baron Samedi.
Like, oh man, don't forget Baron Samedi.
His name was Dwarf.
Yes.
I don't think I know him well enough to call him.
That's Mr. Dwarf to you.
He's 29 credits. That's not bad.
That is impressive.
Yeah, he's. He lived all the way to 2002. Mostly pretty much entirely Mexican. Although Little Red Riding Hood and her three friends sounds like it could be a porn. I have to look into that one. Only a four for me. Crazy concept, Stan.
Well, I mean, voodoo's always good for a start with crazy concept. And also Mexican and end of career movies for the horror actors, old timey horror actors, that kind of thing. A lot of good stuff like that when you've got the idea of a temperance person and the cop trying to clean up the town and sorta doing it. Everything was like sorta. There was no like going all the way. It was just sorta. So there's no real story, and other than like the idea of like snakes and things, it's just a whole bunch of unfinished concepts. So to me, what could be crazier than not actually finishing what you start at all? So I'm gonna go with seven.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did we wake you, Nick?
Yeah. No, are you watching the movie again? Is that
taking in what Stan was spewing? And he was spewing a lot. No, the concept is fairly crazy. I mean, I can't imagine that Boris Karloff was like a huge draw at the box office at this point. I can't imagine why you'd go let's make it South American voodoo instead of regular voodoo. That'll get the viewers. Yeah, and we'll film it cheap in Mexico.
It's a Mexican production. What are they gonna? You know, people in Mexico are gonna go, fuck, we can make this more expensive in America. Let's go film it there.
But it was released. I actually assume the Mexican segments were actually part of another Mexican film, and Boris was just sort of inserted there.
I did wonder that many times. Yeah. If they were made as two separate films.
Yeah, that's fair. That is fair to wonder. Not right, but fair to wonder.
So, it's fairly crazy. At the same time, they were doing it just to make a movie. I'm going to go with a 6. Not the highest, but really not bottom basement.
Not the highest, but not the lowest. Again, all right.
So mediocre score.
We've got our math down again. Good. Check.
So if you look at movies like White Zombie and stuff like that, that were zombie movies, you know, before 1968, this is kind of what they were. Maybe not this schlocky, but like this concept is pretty much what zombie movies used to be. And then in 1968, while this movie was still in original first drafts, Night of the Living Dead came out and kind of changed the zombie genre completely. But if you look at it, and then they still decided to go with this. So if you look at it and think crazy concept, it's like, no, this was a real paint by the numbers pre Night of the Living Dead zombie story idea. So I got a 3.
I usually try to imagine what the pitch was when you walked into the producer's office. I believe that there was no pitch done.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they just had a pile of money and they're like, I don't know, make 4 movies.
Yeah.
find it. Yeah. Get a name. American actor.
Sounds about right. I mean, I wasn't there, but I feel like I was.
I've created a word picture for you. of this, just a literal pile of money. And then they're like, do 4 of them. And I'm going to go with a 6 on the crazy concept for this one. All right. Every season we have 6 secret modifiers. This film has 3 of them. It does get a -1 for hide the mustache. Because as I said, 15 minutes out of 90 have Mr. Karloff in them. The mustache does die, presumably. Which is also a -1.
Zombie. He can be brought back as a zombie. Nobody dies. Nobody dies in a zombie movie. You just become undead. Does that count?
I'm going to count that.
We never see. If there was a sequel, then I might question. But thankfully, there's no sequel.
But the captain, Labouche, he has a spectacular mustache. He has a wonderful mustache. The commandant, the captain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it does get the mustache pal bonus. That it's not a lone mustache. Which brings us to a pretty respectable 65 out of 100 for this film.
Well, it's like we said earlier, this is the kind of movie that is an ideal Boogaloo movie. It's not going to win, but it's definitely got some good, strong Boogaloo for us to watch, some good laughs. Sure, there's a few moments where it's kind of sleepy, but for the most part, at the end, I do not feel bad for watching this movie. This is one where I could easily picture myself just sitting down on a Saturday afternoon thinking, yeah, you know, what kind of movie would I like to watch? And then choosing something at random and this popping up, so.
Well, it's, once again, this is a great movie. Like, this is a good bad movie.
Yes. Right?
And this is a movie you get together with your buddies with and bust balls on. And you can do that all night long. And it's not only available on the Internet Archive for download, but it also is even more importantly, like every movie this season on Tubi. And Tubi, of course, is a free service. You just have to put up with very minimal commercial interruptions in order to watch this.
And that's the benefit of shorter movies as well, is the less commercial breaks. But
I could have used a few more.
they were the most enjoyable part of the movie for you.
Yeah, it does happen. It totally does happen. Well, we went from Mexico, and now we're heading off to Italy to move on in our free mustache rides, where Franco Nero is going to take care of some street law next episode.
Oh, so, damn it. You just summarized the movie for me. We haven't heard of that episode yet.
Hope you wrote that down.
Yeah. Well, Jim, tell the folks where to find us.
Absolutely. We are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. And for everything else, visit our podcast sponsors, We Talk Podcasts. They have their website, which is, you guessed it, wetalkpodcast.com. And they are also on Facebook and on Twitter. You can keep up with all of our stuff. And we are soon, we're five out of eight that we're through this season. So you'll be able to keep up to date on what next season's going to look like.
That's right. We are one down, two to go. And that's never going to get old right there.
I think maybe the last episode, that'll be a problem.
I think it's going to be more of a problem next season.
Yes. Well, we've had a lot of fun. Isle of the Snake People is a good time. It's some 15 minutes of Boris Karloff fun and voodoo, because, you know, what doesn't go better in a movie than voodoo? So join us next episode as Season 7, Free Mustache Rides, carries on with Street Law. So for Jim, and for Jack, and for Nick, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu. Thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
During many centuries in various parts of the world, various diabolical rites and ceremonies have been practiced in homage to various sinister gods who are believed to have many supernatural powers. These rites are generally known as voodoo, which consists mostly of black magic and the cult of death.